Based on a True Crime Story,
a podcast where we cover a true crime incident and then the movie that followed based upon that incident.
I am one of your hosts, Andrea.
And I am Kelly. And this week we are covering the case of Colleen Stan, otherwise known as...
The Girl in the Box.
Yes. And I will cover the crime and Andrea will talk about the movie, the Lifetime movie that was based on it.
Yes.
Okay. So, trigger warning, there is going to be a discussion of sexual violence, torture, murder.
Brainwashing.
Yeah, gaslighting. Hi, yes. Welcome to 2020. If any of these things affects you, maybe you do not want to listen. Maybe it's just this episode, not the whole podcast, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to jump right in. So, on May 19th, 1977, Colleen Stan was hitchhiking. These always start with hitchhiking.
Hitchhiking was such a thing.
I'm so glad it's not anymore. From her home in Eugene, Oregon, to a friend's home in Northern California, where she was heading to a birthday party. Stan stated that she was an experienced hitchhiker. That's a horrible phrase all on its own.
That's one thing I would not want to be good at in life.
And had already allowed two rides to go past before accepting the ride with Cameron Hooker. She reportedly felt confident climbing into the blue van because Hooker's wife Janice and their baby were in the car with them. When they stopped at a gas station along the way, Stan went to use the restroom. A voice told me to run and jump out a window and never look back, she recalled, but she calmed her fears and went back to the car. Colleen's nightmare began 20 minutes into the journey when Hooker suggested stopping off to visit some ice caves. Colleen says, Janice got out of the car and went down to a lake with the baby. They were playing when Hooker got into the back seat and held a knife to my throat. He tied me up and placed a box over my head. The box was a wooden head box, which was designed to prevent light, sound, and fresh air from entering. Oh my God. It just, makes me so uncomfortable just talking about it. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
Born in Alturas, California in 1953, Cameron Hooker moved around quite a bit with his family, but was generally recalled by former elementary school classmates as a happy kid who enjoyed making the other children laugh. The Hooker family finally settled down in Red Bluff, California. In 1969, around which time Hooker's personality also underwent a... The Hooker family finally settled down in Red Bluff, California in 1969, around which time Hooker's personality also underwent a marked change. He became withdrawn and avoided social activities, though he was far from the first teenager to go through an awkward phase, and the rest of his high school career passed without any notable incidents. Janice was just 15 when she met the 19-year-old Hooker, who was by then working at a lumber mill. The teenage girl was insecure and admitted that no matter how good or rotten a guy was to me, I just kind of latched on to him. She remembered Hooker as nice, tall, and good-looking, and was delighted by the interest of the older boy. I'm sure as women, we can all speak to what that does for your self-esteem.
Indeed.
When an older man is interested in you. So not that she's not culpable for a lot of things going forward, but Janice later described herself as the kind of person who gave in so somebody would love me. When Hooker asked if he could suspend her from a tree by leather handcuffs, something he claimed he had done with other girlfriends, she readily complied. And although the experience hurt and frightened her, Hooker was so affectionate afterward that she managed to dispel any misgivings. And as the relationship progressed, so did the violence Hooker performed on Janice. Cameron Hooker and Janice wed in 1975. The sadomasochistic acts had expanded to include whippings, chokings, and underwater submersions to the point where Cameron nearly killed his young wife. Janice would later testify that although she did not enjoy these acts, she continued to love Hooker and above all desired to have a child with him. The same year that they were married, Hooker and Janice came to the agreement that they could have a child if Hooker could take a slave girl. There was to be no penetrative sex with Stan, according to the agreement, but this later changed. And on the first night of her kidnapping, Stan was strung up by her hands, physically attacked by Hooker, and left blindfolded and suspended while Janice and Hooker had sex below her. Ugh.
Gross.
I was terrified, said Colleen. Janice watched as Hooker tortured me, and then they had sex in front of me. I was convinced they were going to kill me. I was tied up and put into a wooden box measuring 3 feet by 6 feet for the rest of the night. After her kidnapping, Stan stated that she was tortured and kept locked in the box 23 hours a day, until she was given a contract and forced to sign herself into slavery for life in January of 1978. In view from the box under her bed, propped up against her purse, Colleen told ABC 10 News, was a photo Colleen saw every day of Marie Elizabeth Spanhanke, a previous victim whose body was never found. She further stated that Hooker led her to believe that she was being watched by a large, powerful, demonic organization called The Company, which would painfully torture and harm her family if she tried to escape. Stan subsequently became a slave, referred to as Kay, was forced to call Hooker master, and was not allowed to talk without permission. Hooker reportedly wanted Stan to be like the female character in the 1954 French erotic novel Story of O, and soon started raping her, which consisted of oral rape. Hooker did not want to have vaginal sex with Stan because he considered that to be a breach of his agreement with his wife. Instead, he raped her vaginally and anally with implements. Following this, the Hooker family moved to a mobile home in Red Bluff with Stan, where she was kept locked in wooden boxes under the couple's waterbed. In 1978, Janice gave birth to a second child on the waterbed right above Stan. Stan said that her faith in God and belief in a chance of escape helped her survive. Her greatest fear was the company, which Hooker reinforced daily. To avoid painful punishment, Stan tried to comply with his commandments, which later led to her being allowed to go out to jog, work in the yard, care for the family's children in the mobile home, and help him build bigger accommodations, like an underground dungeon for more slaves. Even with an open door, neighbors, and a telephone, she made no attempt to escape as, according to Stan, her fear of the company kept her from seeking help. Additionally, Stan was allowed to visit her family by herself in 1981, but did not reveal her situation due to her fear of the possible consequences. Her family thought she was involved in a cult because of her homemade clothes, lack of money, and absence of communications over the years. They did not want to pressure her, fearing she would stay away forever. Can you imagine? The next day, Stan returned for a second visit with Hooker posing as her boyfriend. There was even a photograph taken, because at the trial, Stan explained that she was happy about visiting her family, who were therefore able to take a photograph of her and Hooker happily smiling together. So the brainwashing and the gaslighting was real. I mean, mm-hmm. She had the opportunity to get away and didn't. According to Stan, Hooker feared he had given his slave too much freedom and took her back to his mobile home, where he locked her in the wooden box under his waterbed. She remained in the box 23 hours a day for the next 3 years. Bodily functions were dealt with by her using a bedpan, which she positioned under herself with her feet. It was stated in court that Hooker's children were told Kay had gone home. However, once his children had gone to bed, Hooker would take Colleen out of the box to feed and then torture her. She was reportedly not allowed to make any noise and had to lie still for 23 hours a day, at time in the dark with little air to breathe. During the summers, conditions were especially harsh on her as the temperature in her box would rise to over 100 degrees. And then to feed herself, she often ate scraps of food. It was not until 1983 that Stan was reintroduced to the children and neighbors. He was also allowed to get a job as a maid at a motel. Hooker wanted Stan to become his second wife, which was a turning point for Janice. Janice confessed to that, starting with their first date, she had also been tortured, brainwashed, and referred to as a whore over the years by Hooker. Janice further stated that she survived their relationship by engaging in denial and compartmentalization. You think? By August 1984, Janice began struggling with herself and went to Stan in order to inform her that Hooker was not part of the company. However, she maintained that the organization did exist. In a televised interview for Girl in the Box, Stan told the interviewer that she then went to a bus station and phoned Hooker to inform him that she was leaving him, and that he reacted by bursting into tears. Stan subsequently caught a bus home. In the months that followed, she did not contact the police, but continued to call Hooker regularly. She explained this at the trial by saying that she wanted to give Hooker, at Janice's request, a chance to reform. 3 months later, Janice reported her husband to the police. She informed Lieutenant Jerry D. Brown of the Red Bluff Police that Hooker had kidnapped, tortured, and murdered Marie Elizabeth Spanhanke, who had disappeared on January 31st, 1976. Authorities were unable to locate the remains of the woman, so due to the lack of physical proof, no murder charges were brought. Chris Hatcher, a forensic psychologist and criminal profiler, testified for Hooker's prosecution at the start of the 1985 trial. and Janice testified against her husband in exchange for full immunity. Both Janice and Stan took the stand at the trial. They delivered emotional testimonies that recounted the abuses they had suffered at the hands of the accused. Janice even confessed that her husband had tortured and killed another girl, Marie Elizabeth Spanhanke, back in 1976. Booker's defense team desperately seized upon the facts of Stan's seemingly willing compliance with all of Hooker's demands. His lawyers claimed that although Hooker had indeed kidnapped Stan, the sexual acts were consensual and should not be considered criminal. Hooker also took the stand to defend himself and claimed that his actions had been significantly less violent than what was described by the two women. The defense team even brought in a psychiatrist who tried to make the argument that the brutalities Stan had to suffer were in reality little different to the drill new Marine recruits underwent each day, an argument that the judge interrupted. The jury took 3 days to deliberate before finding Hooker guilty on 7 of 8 counts, including kidnapping and rape. He received a series of sentences that amounted to a total of 104 years in prison. After the verdict was announced, the judge made a remarkable personal statement. He personally thanked the jury for rejecting the defense psychiatrist's claims and then went on to declare Cameron Hooker the most dangerous psychopath I have ever dealt with. He will be a danger to women as long as he is alive. Originally ineligible for parole until 2023, Hooker had his hearing date moved up 7 years to 2015 by California's Elderly Parole Board. On April 16, 2015, his request for parole was denied, but Hooker will be eligible for another hearing in 2030. After the trial, Stan studied for an accounting degree, and as reported by Mara Bovesun in a March 9, 2014 New York Daily News article, tried to move on to a normal life, but misery followed her. A string of failed marriages and a troubled child, a daughter named Danielle Antolina Rodriguez, who's now in jail. Stan also joined and volunteered for Reading Women's Refuge Center, an organization to help abused women. And Janice reverted to her maiden name, Lashley, became a registered associate social worker, and has worked as a mental health professional. Stan has changed her last name, and both Janice and Stan continue to live in California, but they do not communicate with each other. And Stan is also raising her granddaughter. So
that's a lot.
That is a lot. There's so many elements to that that are.
Yeah. So.
Oh, sorry. Oh. And I did get I got information from Wikipedia, from the ABC 10 interview, which is available on YouTube. There was an article on People called The Girl in the Box. There was also, because in the movie that Andrea is about ready to talk about, that she also did a lot, Stan did a lot of press for that. So there were a lot of articles accompanying the release of the movie. So
this is a Lifetime movie. It's one of those, which came out on September 10th of 2016. Starred Addison Timelin as Colleen or Kay, Zane Holtz as Cam or Cameron, Hooker.
I referred to him, yeah, as Hooker because he does not deserve the.
You'll see as I'm reading this that I call him the dude a lot, or the creepy couple.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve to be humanized because he's not a human.
And as Jan, a one Zelda Williams stars as the wife, and yes, it's that Zelda Williams who is Robin Williams' daughter. So this movie starts with a Chevy Citation pulling down a long road. And it stops. A man gets out and opens the door to a woman who doesn't want to get out of the car. He moves to the trunk and he tells the woman that he's going to need some help, but she says she can't do this. He lets her know that she is a part of it too, so she helps him take whatever is out of the trunk, and as it hits the ground, you see it's a body wrapped in plastic. It hits the ground and he hands his wife a shovel. You don't know who these people are yet at this point of the story, but so they go off to in the middle of the forest and to bury the body. The woman holds a rosary, and later back at the car, the woman tells her that she just doesn't understand what happened. He tells her that it was an accident because he told the girl not to scream, and then they drive off into the sunrise. So we're then taken to Northern California in 1977. A hitchhiking girl hangs out by the highway waiting for a ride. The couple from earlier although they're in a different car, stops to pick her up. They make chit-chat, random question, you know, random where are you going, stuff like that. At a gas station, hitchhiker girl gets out for a potty break, and the dude gets this box out of the trunk. The woman in the front looks really uncomfortable. The couple, their names are Janice and Cam. While driving again, Cam mentions that there are some ice caves that they are going to check out, and hitchhiker girl says that she really just wants to get to her destination, but the creepy couple say it won't take long. Again, we go down a really long road, and they stop.
Is the child with them?
No, there's no child.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay.
Hitchhiker girl. We know her name is Colleen, but I will call her hitchhiker girl for a little bit here. She knows that something's going on, but before she can say, you know, I don't think I want to do this, dude has a knife, takes a knife to her throat. Takes her to the car. He puts a blindfold on her, gags her, and ties her hands and feet. And then in the car, he puts her head into a box. So basically, like, they show, like, the box is on the seat. And, like, he basically, like, makes her lay down sideways with her head in the box that way. And then covers her with a sleeping bag. They stop for food, which is, he asks, creepy. He asks his wife, Jan, if she wants some French fries. And she's just super uncomfortable. Like, you can tell she's really weirded out by this whole situation while he's acting like it's no big deal. Later, when it's dark, they arrive to a house where Colleen is begging to be let go. He tells her to shut up, and after making her stand on a cooler, kicks it away after he attaches her to some sort of pulley system. He whips her and then has sex with his wife and puts then Colleen in the box. The next day, Janice asks Cam how long this will go on for, and he says, well, just a few days, and then they'll drop her off somewhere. He goes to work, I think, because he just says, she said, where are you going? And he's, where I always go every day. Well, who the hell knows where that is? Janice does some praying, and she hears Colleen crying, so she goes downstairs with a shotgun, and Janice opens the box and asks Colleen what she wants. Colleen says that she's just cold, she wants to go home, and she won't tell anyone. The next time you see Janice, she's on the couch with headphones, playing music very loud. And the dude comes home and goes to the basement. Colleen is still there, though, so obviously Janice didn't let her go. He removes the gag and gives her some water and bread and tells her that he is doing this because he can. While in bed, Cam and Janice talk, and she tells him that if they let her go, she's pretty sure that Colleen would go to the police. Cam says, well, then they'll just have to keep her. And Janice is really weirded out by this, and he gives her some spiel about love, honor, and obey, and she's scared. But he says that they could start a family because if Colleen's there, then Janice wouldn't have to have all that stuff done to her. So she asks him to promise to that, you know, okay, but you have to promise not to have sex with Colleen. And he promises.
So their timeline's a little different.
Yeah. So now we see that he's made a bigger box and she's locked inside with a weird, like, hose thing. And she does scream.
For breathing?
Yeah, I think it's for breathing. It looked almost like one of those noise sleep machines from, like, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it had, like, a hose attached to it and inside the box. Meanwhile, a more peaceful setting, a man answers the phone and asks another woman if she has seen Colleen. And the woman says no. And now the man and woman are filing a police report. I'm guessing that these were her parents. And while they're filling out the police report, the police tell them that, you know, unfortunately, she is of age and she can do what she wants. Back in Creepy Town. The dude is working and Janice comes to visit him at work and says that she's pregnant. And he looks unamused, but Janice now wants to get rid of the girl and Colleen. And he says no, because she just basically got pregnant. And we also learn that it's been 6 months.
Oh, that they've had her for 6 months?
That they've had her, yeah.
And I don't think I talked about it. And I can tell by looking at the actors that played these characters. But these guys are all in their early to mid 20s. So these are young people. This isn't like a 40 or 50 year old man that's right. committing these atrocities. This right. is a young man, just like,
yeah. He had a really weird, not filled in beard mustache and wore aviator glasses. And then Jan, the wife, wears like the big Gloria Steinem
glasses. She's well, at least during the trial, she was a little heavier set and always wore like big baggy clothes.
She was pretty, I mean,
plain.
Yeah, plain.
Yeah.
It's a good word. So we learn that it's been 6 months. And then in the next scene, it says that it's been 230 days since the abduction. And at the house, the landlord is outside. The landlord apparently lives right next door to them and is doing some yard work and mentions that he needs to come over and service the furnace and needs to get in the basement. Also, at this point, Janice has like a brace on her leg and some crutches. And the landlord asks, you know, oh, what happened? And he said, well, oh, it's just some arthritis that she had taken care of. I don't know what you have taken care of that requires a knee brace and...
Well, you can't really have arthritis taken care of, right. unfortunately. She's like 19, 20. Yeah.
When they're in the house, he reads, has a magazine that has inside a contract about slavery and S&M type of things. And he tells Colleen to read it, and it talks about a new type of prostitution, and that if she would try to escape, then there would be punishment. And he then taunts Colleen with pictures of her family, that if she tried to escape, her family would suffer for it. And he tells her that Janice was a slave and they messed her up, and that he's the one who saved Janice from... They do talk about the company mm-hmm. that you talked about. So he tells Colleen that he saved Janice from the company and they let him. Because he's a higher up type of person. So
if we would have let him go for too much longer, he probably would have become a cult leader.
Something, yeah. So he wants her to sign this contract, and Colleen asks, well, if she doesn't sign it, then what? He tells her, well, then he'll just sign it for her, and then he'll make her pay for it. So Colleen signs it, and she cries. In the next scene, he puts a robe on her and a collar. It's like a dog collar with mm-hmm. like a pendant on the front of it.
Mm-hmm. Or a chain, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Well, it's like he said, well, this is her ID. Like, so, you know, oh, like gotcha, how gotcha. Dogs have collars with
things. He's just demeaning her and making yes. dehumanizing her.
Right. And it has a K on it. So he tells her that she is K. And he will, or she will address them as sir and ma'am and only speak when spoken to, etc.
So I wondered what made him choose K. Were there A, B, C, D, E, F, G? I mean, were there enough people that led up to K? Or did he think Colleen started with a K?
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't touch on that.
Yeah, they didn't really talk about it either. But it makes you wonder. Either way, does not paint him as emotionally
right.
or intelligent.
Not at all. And the next scene, the landlord is outside again still being a bugaboo about the furnace and noticing like they have the windows covered up and some different things. So dude goes inside and tells Janice that they need to move. And... she's pretty far along at this point. So then actually the next scene says it's September of 1978 and Janice is having a baby
on the bed.
He is delivering the baby and Colleen is under the bed. I said, it's kind of like a weird platform bed.
Yeah. It's a water bed.
Yeah. So she gives birth to the baby and Colleen asks if she can hold it. And Janice lets her and then gives it back and she goes back under the bed back into the box. So now it says it's 683 days since abduction and we're in March of 1979. And everyone is crabby from the baby. A fork falls on the floor and Janice accuses Kay of not setting one for her at the table. Janice tells Cam that she is lazy and a liar. So she gets whipped for it and Janice realizes that she did set a fork. It just had fallen on the floor but doesn't say anything. Later that night, Janice and Cam are talking about, well, you know, what if she tries to escape and goes to the cops? And so the next day, he fills Kay's head with stories of, you know, that if you try to escape, that cops are in on it too. And so basically, like, everyone's in on it. You don't know who's part of this company. Yeah. So he has a job out in the forest with some lumber, and he takes Kay with him. He says, though, that the guys that they're meeting are also all in the trade, and if they hear her call him sir, that they'll want to steal her for themselves. So she also asks if maybe that while they're outside, she asks him if possibly she can go home one day. And he says, well, how about she could write a letter? And then he hits himself with the axe and is down for the count.
Like an accident he did or on purpose?
I don't know. I couldn't tell because it was like he was doing something and then, but I think because he was talking to her, he was distracted and he hit himself. Oh,
so she's going to get punished.
And she basically like looks down the road and like kind of looks back at him and looks down the road and looks up at him and looks down the road. And I'm like, there's 45 minutes left in this movie, so I'm pretty sure she's not running. So she helps him and they get home and later on, Janice asks Cam if he still loves her and that, but it seems like he cares about Kay more than her. They talk about sharing Kay so they end up tying her to the bed and start fooling around on top of her. But suddenly then dude is like all over Kay. So Janice gets really pissed off. There are three takeaways from this part. He wears really weird tidy whities. They have a really gross bathroom.
And threesomes are never work out.
Right. And suddenly the little girl is 4.
Okay.
So we went from like being like a baby to being like 4. And they didn't like a lot for any, they didn't say anything about the time at all.
Mm-hmm. You just were able to gauge time by how old
the little girl was. Yeah. So they decide, Cam and Janice decide to go to Lake Tahoe for the weekend. And they leave her in the box while she's gone. So Kay starts hallucinating like hardcore about, you know, like, why is this happening to
her? Dehydration, I'm assuming.
Why did God allow this? And then, she is hallucinating that she's drowning. Like the box is full of water and she's drowning. And an angel comes to her and says that she'll protect her. And so she kicks and kicks and she kicks the door to the box open. And they creepy couple come back from their weekend in Tahoe and he goes in the bedroom and realizes that she's not in the box anymore. And he literally like is on his hands and knees and like looks in the box and he's like, "Aw, heck." Like, that's really what you said?
Well, you know, those sadists, they don't have bad language.
I guess. He looks around and he finds her hiding in the shower with a Bible. She said she was thirsty.
Probably.
So he wants to know with the Bible if she found any answers. And she says that God says there's a reason for everything. And she wants to know why this is happening to her. But he just tells her to get in the box. So later on, he circles the word slaves in the Bible and then goes out and digs a hole. Janice asks, Janice wants to know what's up. And Cam tells her that she's not nice to Kay and that if he can't do bondage to Janice, then he'll have to do the stuff to Kay. And the Bible says that the man can have more than one wife. So he wants Janice to play nice. So next day, dude goes to work and Janice lets Kay out of the box and tells her to cover her head. Colleen Kay is kind of confused, but Janice tells her that she wants them to read the Bible together. And so they read the Bible and that, you know, to try to get along and to get along better, she says that she can call her Jan. So now we're in March of 1983, 2,135 days since the abduction. Things are a bit different. Kay puts the little girl to bed and then Cam and Kay are in bed together. He says that, you know, they could get married and that maybe they could have a baby together. She says she isn't sure about that because she knows that he doesn't trust her, but because she wants to see her family. And he says that, you know, he's trying to get it approved from the company. And Kay also asks him when all of this started for him. And he said probably when he was about 5 or 6 that he liked drawing women tied up. They talk a little bit about Jan, and she's totally nowhere in the scene. And I was just like, where the hell is Jan? Did they, like, kill her? Did he, like, you know, what happened to Jan? And so Kay also asked him if he would let this type of thing happen to his daughter. He says no, and she makes a comment about, you know, well, you know, how do you think my dad feels? And he just says, we're done here, get in the box. Kay goes to church with Jan and Amber, that's the little girl, is Amber, and asks, Dan asks if Cam spends time with Kay when she's at work. Kay just says that she only does what Master says. So later on that day, Cam tells Kay to make dinner, and Dan says, you know, in a minute, they're finishing up a game. And Cam gets really pissed off about this and makes Jan go in the bedroom where he hits her. And just Kay takes care of the little girl while that's going. Now we're in September of 1983, 2,310 days since the abduction. Cam sees some flowers from Kay to Jan. And suddenly Cam tells Kay that she can go and see her family. And she asks when she can go, and he says, well, the company wants her to pass some obedience tests first to make sure that she can be trusted. And one of them is to put a barrel of a shotgun in her mouth and pull the trigger. After she does this, though, Cam says that he can, that she can ride her family. And so finally they get to go see her family. He says that the company is watching, and they will know if she tries to do anything dumb. Well, so she's at with her family, and she knows that something is up, but they don't want to scare her off. She's looking through photo albums with her sister and realizes that she missed out on a lot of things. And her sister is grilling her. Sister's grilling her about, you know, this whole situation and stuff. And she's like, I can't talk about it. I want to go to bed. So the next day, her sister again tries to get her to talk to her about these things. But Cam shows up and says that they have to be, that they have to leave. He also mentions to the family that they're going to get married. He makes excuses, and Colleen is just really trying to save her family from what she thinks is impending doom, really, at this point, you know, because she doesn't want to do anything to upset the company.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, back at the trailer, Cam tells Kay that he saved her. And now she has to choose, and he wants to marry her. And Jan overhears this and is pretty mad. So the next day, Jan's packing, and she says that she's going to leave. And Colleen panics, and Cam goes after Jan, and Jan tells him that this is it. It's either me or her. And he says that, you know, well, you can't go to the police because you helped, and that little girl will get taken away from you. And Jan just states that, well, at least she won't burn in hell.
You sure about that?
Yeah, I know, right. So Cam watches her leave, and Kay tries to be really sympathetic to the situation, but Cam treats her like shit. You know, what'd you think was going to happen? You know, that you would just step in and play the role. And he puts her, puts her in a new box that's under the shed outside, and says that, oh, she won't be alone for very long. He's going to go find, it's big enough for more people. So it's pouring rain, and he is looking, he's out looking for prey, so to speak, and Janice is at church praying, and water is filling up in the hole where Kay is. And suddenly the door opens, and it's Janice, and she sets her free. And she tells Kay that there was another girl before her, and that Cam had killed her. And, but then, so it kind of like, while they're talking, it's like the closed captions car pulls up. And so you're kind of making it seem like, oh, they're going to get caught.
Yeah.
But, Cam comes home and realizes that Kay is gone.
Yeah.
So Jan takes Kay to the bus stop and tells her that there, is no company. And Kay, because Kay was going to stay with Jan if she wanted her to. And she said, there's no company. You don't have to stay. So Kay gets out of the car and gets on the bus. Oh, Jan watches her leave. And Cam is basically at the trailer just sobbing that they're gone. I said, he's either sobbing that they're gone or sobbing that he's busted.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's probably that he's busted.
One of the two things. And then it pops on screen that Cam Hooker was sentenced to 104 years. In prison, Jan got immunity for testifying against him, and the abduction lasted a total of 2,640 days. And yeah,
it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of this until
I hadn't heard of it either.
I googled.
Like, I wish I would
Lifetime
have
Lifetime movies based off true crime, and that's when I found it.
Yeah, part of me kind of wishes I would have maybe looked into it a little bit more before I watched this movie, because it did trigger me in some areas, not being in a box and not being sexually assaulted, but some brainwashing and gaslighting type things, and I didn't have a super great adolescence. Yeah, so it kind of, it triggered me a little bit in some things, and but onwards and upwards, I got out of it, and that's why they have therapy.
Yeah, it's just this poor woman, though, even though she escaped, I'm sure the PTSD and everything was so ingrained in her. Like I said, you know, she got out, but her life was a mess after that. And I don't know how it could be any other way.
Right.
If you've gone through everything that you've gone through.
I will say that that is why when I'm emotional, why I am an emotional eater. A lot of that comes from being punished with food. So when I'm super emotional and stuff, then that's why I weigh 300 pounds, I guess, because I'm an emotional eater when it comes to those types of, that's my trigger. You know, if I get triggered, then it's like, I must
comfort yourself all with the foods. Things,
comfort myself with the food. Anyway, so
I forgot a couple of sources too. I had information on allthingsinteresting.com. There were a lot of links to other articles buried inside the People one, and then the because it was kind of a transcript from the ABC 10, mm-hmm. and there were links in both of those, and obviously Wikipedia also gives you links. So those were kind of my jumping off points for the information that I had.
All right. Nothing to share?
No.
Okay. Me either. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate, review, and subscribe. Everyone likes 5-star reviews, mm-hmm. and they help us get
other listeners, yeah. other subscribers.
I was going to say get our message out, but we don't really have a message.
our message is listen.
Yeah, please listen.
Listen, Linda.
Listen, Linda. You can check us out on Instagram at Based on a True Crime Story. Email is based on a true crime story at gmail.com. I always make Kelly do the Twitter.
Based on a true crow one. And if you do follow us on our Instagram, I do post a lot of true crime memes. I know there's other true crime podcasts do different things, but I feel like because a lot of the subjects we talk about are so heavy that it's a nice palate cleanser like we were just talking about. So don't begrudge us.
Don't begrudge us.
I mean, we'll always share the information about the cases that we, or pictures from the cases that we cover. But on those days where we don't have any episodes to talk about, you're going to get some true crime memes.
Excellent. All right. Well, until next time, bye.
Bye.